Hey everyone, it's John here. It's almost midnight, finishing up the editing. Just want to let you know that there's some static inside of the episode. I've tried my best to mute it. Hopefully it sounds fine. On with the show! Fastcast.
That was good. I like the energy. Good attempt. God. Let's go a second time and see if you can nail it on that one.
Welcome to the Fastcast. I'm your host, Slowpoke number one, and that's also your host, David.
Yes, I am your second host, Slowpoke number two, David Chalante, and guess where we are, friend audiences.
Do you actually want them to guess?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's, if you guess, you get a prize.
Okay, leave a comedic pause. And we're here at PAX!
Yeah, PAX Australia 2017. Now, John, is this your... What PAX is this for you?
This is my tri-PAX.
Your third PAX.
Yes, I have now completed the Triforce, and we'll get the Master Sword soon.
Okay, so I don't know when PAX started. I think this is my fifth PAX, but I've done all of the Melbourne PAXes. The first one was the most overwhelming in terms of emotions, but at this point, I'm an old hand, yes. And it's basically like, I don't know, walking around a shopping mall at this point. Yeah. It's not to say I'm not having a great time. It's just an expected time in a lot of ways.
Okay, cool.
This episode today is actually recorded live at PAX.
Yeah, yeah.
Not live. You guys are probably listening to this pre-recorded. Live-ish at PAX.
Yeah, when we say at PAX, we mean at PAX.
Like, yeah,
I'm
can
standing,
probably
you know,
hear...
recording outdoor I'm not good at this.
Yeah,
outdoor,
but you can probably hear the wonderful ambience of thousands of nerds enjoying their wonderful Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory
of
the Melbourne air.
Just listen to them now. Look at them. Oh, so raucous. Oh, so much fun. Oh, look, a child is crying with joy.
Yes. Maybe joy. We don't know. I'm not the child.
Yep.
We like PAX for a bunch of whole different reasons. Mm-hmm. But I think the main one for both of us, the main interesting element for both of us is the Indie Showcase, which
yes.
is what we're probably going to talk about today, because there's way too much to talk about.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we figure if we focus in on something that needs the light and needs the boost, that's probably the best use of our PAX time.
The giant Nintendo stand with the glowing neon lights that goes from the floor to the ceiling probably doesn't need our marketing help.
I doubt there is a single person here who didn't know Odyssey was coming out this week.
Probably.
Actually
don't know.
You know, we like, obviously everybody has their own stuff, but Mario doesn't really need the help.
Yes.
Everybody knows who Mario is, and Mario is coming out, and I really want it really bad.
That is absolutely true. Before we jump into that, though, David, you have mentioned that this is your fifth PAX.
Mm.
How are you finding it?
Good. Like, honestly, we haven't been here very long. This is about halfway through our first day.
Yeah.
So I saw the opening story time with Bernie Burns. It was actually very good.
Yes.
And
Really interesting guy.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a very interesting conversation as well, because, you know, Rooster Teeth has a bit of a... How should I put this? A bit of a reputation for being popular with the Xbox crowd.
And there's nothing...
But he is a specific individual and actually kind of a fascinating person.
Yeah.
And,
well, the company that he founded and everything they do now today, and they even released an actual movie. So.
Yeah, they've got a live-action movie, and I've been meaning to check out Ruby, I think is how you pronounce
yes,
it, but that's their anime.
Anime.
And one of the things I learned from the talk that he did is apparently that's the first anime produced in the West that's been imported in Japan.
Huh. Nice.
Which is, like, that seems so weird that hasn't happened before. But, like, congratulations, Rooster Teeth, I guess.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
But what about you, man? How's your PAX going?
I always find these places overwhelming because you're so used to games being something you do alone or with a few friends.
Yeah.
It's just a group of you, a small group. And I'm literally in a crowd, a sea of people. Someone's chatting here in the background. And,
yeah.
And there was, like, a hall full of people. It always makes me I always feel really uncomfortable
and
nervous.
Did you queue up in the queue hall?
Oh, you had, yeah, like, I did.
Yeah.
Right at the end. So I could see everybody in there. I think I even got some footage of it
that you might see.
Maybe. It depends how good it turns out to be.
Yes.
Yeah, I wound up in the main theater hall to go straight to that Bernie Burns conversation,
and that was a much more... a much less packed sort of room.
Oh, right.
So
you weren't in the giant... Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't in the main queue. So
okay.
That's generally how I do it. I like to start PAX with the story time or the keynote.
That's a really clever way to do it.
It feels like a start, and I always do the Omegathon at the end just
yes.
because that feels like it's a good close to it.
It's the, it's the intro and the on... I don't remember how stage shows work.
It's the opening and the closing, whatever. This is also the first PAX where I haven't been in a specific uniform or costume. I'm just wearing whatever the fuck I want.
You're here as a civilian.
Yes. Last year I was here as an enforcer. Mm-hmm. Every other year, I mean, it's not exactly as demanding as being as an enforcer, but every other year I've been doing cosplay. So yeah. There's energy that's expended that isn't PAX centric. And so this time I feel a little bit more like I'm
part of the crowd?
Yeah, part of the crowd. There's a little bit less between me and the environment. It's much calmer. I can't even tell you how zen I feel right now.
The idea of wearing cosplay sounds really appealing, except for, like, just all those little details. Like, I just don't want to have to worry about
every
everything.
Every single time I've done it, you lose some part of your costume at some point, and then it's like, well, I can't take a bag, so if I buy anything, I just have to... like, it ruins the costume as well. It's just, there's a lot of stuff that fucks with
a
it.
A lot of mental and emotional pressure.
Yeah, so, like... To all of the cosplayers here who are, as always, doing an amazing job, good job on the costumes.
Good
also, good job on the emotional labor that you're undergoing today. Like, I've been there. I understand it. Mm-hmm. Good on you. Thanks for having a great time at PAX. Anyway, we should probably talk about the thing we're supposed to talk about, huh?
Oh, fine, David. We can talk about the thing we're supposed to talk about. Oh, you're such a bully. Yes, we're here to talk about some indie games.
Yeah, indie games. So, John and I, this is actually the first time we've linked up at PAX so far. We were flying solo as we perused... The Indie Showcase. For anybody who doesn't know, the Indie Showcase is basically what it sounds like. A bunch of indie games submit to be exhibited at this, like, indie spotlight area on the PAX exhibition floor. If you get approved, then you're there and people see you. These are mostly Australian indies as well. So.
Yes, quite a few of them actually.
All right, John, do you want to start with a game, or do you want me to start with a game?
Yes, David. Okay, so as I was walking into PAX, I was approaching the indie booths. I saw in the distance a wombat.
Oh,
a beautiful wombat! And I walked over to a game called Paperbark, which is an Australian game.
Mm-hmm.
You
would imagine if you saw a wombat and it's called Paperbark, wouldn't you?
Yes. And
there's just the whole native flora and fauna represented there.
Yeah. So it was a game from the Netherlands, and it's an Australian one. It's basically a game.
I spoke to a wattle tree about this.
I did, actually. It's basically a sort of like an exploration kind of relaxation kind of game where you take your little wombat friend around the bush.
So the wombat's the protagonist of said game.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and basically, when you start the game, it's just a white screen. Mm-hmm. And then, as you start to tap on it, slowly splotches appear, and eventually...
Okay, unfinished swan vibe getting out there.
And then, eventually, as you sort of kind of click and move, the wombat comes out of his burrow, and then you start to explore the wilderness of the Australian outback, and the watercolor is the term I would use.
Okay.
So if you know any of those classic Australian kind of watercolor
books.
Oh,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
It's kind of like a game version of those.
That's good.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. It was so relaxing.
I did not
soothing.
See that at all. I'm so glad that you had a go at that.
After we're done, I'll lead you over there and you can have a look because it is
I can't go on a Nano Jam.
David just...
Like, there's this and then it's literally back-to-back panels of the whole rest of PAX. So you're talking about Paperbark.
Yeah, and it's basically just a relaxation kind of game where you can just sit down there with the wombat, explore the Australian wilderness.
It's like I'm assuming mobile, like a touchscreen device.
It was on an iPad when I used it. Very intuitive, very simple, very straightforward. You know, collect insects, you can go to different plants, it gives you a little bit of a bio about them, just kind of trivia stuff. But it sort of caught my attention because it was just a beautiful looking game and that was very relaxing. Even in this expo hall with all the people. I was still just transfixed with this wombat walking around. Mm. So I really liked it. So there.
Yeah. Oh, I'll give it a go and see how I feel about it. So one of the games that I was the most excited for.
Yep.
I say excited for. I mean, I didn't know it was going to be here before I got here. But after perusing, I think the game that stood out to me the most is something called Rumu.
Rumu.
Rumu. R-U-M-U.
It's the one with the picture of the Roomba, right?
Basically, yeah. So it's a puzzle adventure game where you play as a robotic vacuum cleaner.
That's adorable.
And the art style is what grabbed me about it, because it's got a very, like, you know, that whole Mac thing that Wally was going for with, I think the character's name is Eva?
Yes.
Yeah, but that's sort of the look to it. But it looks very, very fascinating because it's a pretty classic adventure game, which I'm one of those jerks who doesn't think there will ever be enough of them. but the art style is really fascinating. It's like a isometric kind of look and everything is very pretty. Sort of partway between, like that Wally look I was just describing, something like, what's the 2D game that I didn't like?
The one we played? Oxenfree.
Oxenfree, yeah. So it's a sort of partway between that, the sort of the style of Oxenfree, and then maybe something like Portal. Like, if you can imagine the center of those art styles, it's like very palleted, but it's also very good looking as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you said it was like an adventure game?
Yeah. So you wake up, the demo starts on day two. So I don't know too much about like the whole story, but I was talking to the lead on it, Ali McLean, and she was saying that they're hoping to have it released by the end of this year.
Wow. Awesome.
And the sort of the inspirations of what you'd expect, you know, Monkey Island, but then they mentioned a bunch of like AI centric kind of pieces of art, like Her or Ex Machina. So she's just ticking off every single box that I want in a game. And so, yeah, you're this Roomba, you have to clean up the house. And vague spoiler here. So, like I said, this is day two. This is part of the demo, but I still feel like dropping a spoiler warning. Yep. Jump ahead a minute. I'm getting the impression I'm cleaning up after the murder of one of the people in the house.
That's amazing. I love it.
And it's so good. That's... like, you interact with the AI, the smart AI that runs the home and is giving you instructions and stuff. It's very, very cute. But also, I'm getting strong hints of a lot more coming in behind it.
It's very cute, but there's a murder vibe in the air.
Yeah, it's a bit murdery. Yeah. It's cute, but just like 5% murdery a little bit.
And is it that 2.5D kind of style?
Yeah, like I said, very isometric. So you're sort of like angled up, you know, you navigate through the rooms of the house. And the word that she used to describe it was a bit like a dollhouse. Which, I mean, it's a real house, but that kind of feel that, like,
you're looking into it.
Yeah, and so it gives you that little creepy vibe as well.
That sounds cool.
By far and away, the one I'm the most interested in seeing. And like I said, they're hoping that will be released by the end of 2017. That's for Steam, Windows.
Fingers crossed. We'll have to look into following up with some of these games.
Yeah, I plan to if I get a spare moment.
So the next game I sort of wanted to talk about was a game called The Gardens Between.
Okay.
Which is... I'm going to say this about all these games. They're all beautiful, just lovely looking games.
Yeah, see, I saw this one from afar, but there was way too many people in queue, so I didn't get a chance to actually come up close. Yeah, I'm glad that you did.
I think I got in there just like at the right time to just come in and play it. And I got my hands on the gameplay demo that they've got right there in front of us, over there. I don't know why I'm saying that. But it's basically about these two characters who are in a treehouse. Mm-hmm. Right? And the treehouse gets transported to these garden worlds.
Okay.
And now I'm using my hands, but I'm going to use my words to describe
as well, at the same time, for the audio medium.
So you're sort of looking into a diorama.
Yep.
And the diorama has like a snake, it'll have like paths snaking around it that the characters will walk across. But rather than controlling their movement, you actually control their movement through time.
Okay.
Yeah. So when you put the joystick to the right, they go forward in time and explore the island.
But do you have any control over where they go?
You kind of do. So it's like you navigate these paths, and then there's certain points you can get where you can interact with objects. And
Like a Monument Valley thing in a little bit.
Yeah, this is where the puzzles of the game like start to present themselves, because, you know, you have to go forward, you have one of the characters as a lantern, you have to light the lantern to activate the teleporter to go to the next place.
Yeah.
And as this is happening, the camera's like turning around this diorama as it circles.
This is great. This sounds like somewhere between Braid and Fez.
It's just beautiful. It's just interactive diorama. As the characters, they'll interact with the world, and everything they kind of do is to sort of help clue you into different things. I'm going to spoil a little bit from the early in the game, in the demo. The character walks past... So they walk past giant objects as well.
Yep.
There's a VCR there, and like the character walks past, and he pushes the button, and then you keep walking. And then as you realize, you can plug the VCR in, and then if you rewind time and then pause it, he'll rewind the VCR until the tape comes out, then you get to the next part of the level.
Okay, so certain objects are kind of held in moments that you're able to use time control to manipulate that.
Yeah, or like there's a saw that you can jump on and...
AI and time travel, you have me, right? Yeah, yeah. And so if you've got either one of those things, I'm super interested, and now I really want this. Is this out?
I don't think it's not coming out just yet.
Okay.
So they're looking to get it out next year, but we've got to follow up with it later to find out the specifics.
Yeah, for sure.
But it looks really good. It looks really polished, and I think they're just doing the finishing touches on it.
Did you know what the team behind that was called?
I totally don't have it on me. I got all the business
guys.
Well,
then I will take this moment to say something I didn't say before. Robot House is the team that made the one I was talking about.
Robot House.
Yeah.
Nice.
We'll have links for all of this stuff in the description, definitely. So if you if you are interested in any of these games, you'll have the opportunity to follow that up.
Yeah, Paperbark is just Paperbark the game.
Yep, cool.
It's pretty straightforward. And I don't have any details because I'm a bad and not trained. David is so organized, everybody. You need to know this. He's here with his notes. He's all prepared.
I will say.
He wrote things down.
Like, I went up to people to do the whole, hi, can I talk to you about this? I didn't want to introduce myself as press because that's basically a lie.
Yes.
But
literally.
Just the difference between the first person I pseudo interviewed and the last, the quality of that interview was massively different. And I remembered to ask basic questions like, when is this coming out? And what is it for? And who are you? And what is your name?
Well, I think I'll have to learn some advice and hopefully I can go talk to those people again, apologize profusely and get more accurate.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'll move on to my next game now. It's a game called Winter Wake. If my handwriting is correct, it might be Winter Whale, but I'm pretty confident it's Winter Wake.
Man, we are nailing this.
Now, this was a one-person project. A guy who introduced himself as Cheese. Cheese.
Thank you, Cheese, for your game.
Is the developer of Winter Wake.
Yep.
It's on itch at the moment, and this is... Yep. I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe this. It's a text adventure, but you don't navigate through text-based commands. You navigate using the mouse and keyboard in the way that you would an FPS.
Okay.
But the only thing you see is text.
What?
So you can rotate around, and as you look at different things that you can't see, different text descriptions come up on the screen. So it's a very novel kind of game.
So from what I'm hearing, it's like... It's basically just a black screen, but text appears.
Well, not just a black screen.
Okay.
Because that was what I was imagining. I was like, man, it must be really easy to get lost.
You were describing that, and that's exactly what I thought. That's what I said. Those are the words I used.
So it's not a, it's text and a single color, but the color changes based on what you're looking at. So if you're looking at an oak tree, it'll be like a leafy green. But if you look at the grass, it might be a darker green. So it sort of help you keep track of what it is you're looking at beyond just a description. So there is visual feedback. On top of that, you do have a compass at the top of the screen and a height indicator that shows whether you're looking up or looking down.
Yeah.
So have positional indicators showing what angle you're looking at, and your movement is not WASD. It is more like Myst, where you will click a direction and then move to the next zone, like in Text Adventure, right?
Yeah.
So it's a lot easier to figure out where you are and what you're looking at than you would think. Like, I thought I was going to get lost in a heartbeat, but I actually sat down and played this, and it's pretty intuitive. Icons will appear based on whether or not you can interact and what that interaction will be, like if you're going to walk or if you're going to pick the thing up.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun. The premise is you are basically you're snowed in this village, and to get out of this village, you have to solve problems for the folks who live there and, you know, try and figure out some puzzle stuff. You know, classic text adventure stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like I said, a very novel idea, and it's surprisingly easy to move. One other thing I should mention.
Yep.
Full audioscape. So you can hear a waterfall if you're near a waterfall. You can hear birds chirping. When you walk, you hear your footsteps. So keeping track of where you are, again, is both based on the color that you're seeing and what you can hear around you.
Oh, that sounds gorgeous. Yeah. It's so wonderful to see someone have an interesting idea and then execute it in a way that's just... a fantastic kind of follow-up.
Yeah,
I'll have to give it a try.
It reminds me a lot of those, like, Twine games that integrate some of those additional features. So but it's a whole independent engine, and it was just, surprisingly fun to play.
I feel like we're just going to go and see all the games
that the other one missed.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, by complete coincidence, all of the stuff that you saw, I didn't, and all the stuff that I saw, you didn't.
Yeah.
So
on the same wavelength, David.
Yeah, great minds think entirely opposite to one another.
Yep.
So what's another one that you got, Filmway? Hit me up with another one of these good, good indie games.
So the next game that I have is a game called Spin Rhythm.
Yep.
Now, Spin Rhythm really, to me, feels like an Audio Surf style game.
Yeah, it reminded me of like classic rhythm games like, you know, DJ Hero.
Yeah.
Basically, it's what it reminded me of.
Yeah, especially because they have a DJ deck there that you can use to play the game. And I was a big fan of, like, Audio Surf specifically, and even Guitar Hero and games like that.
Yeah.
And to me, this was a wonderful bridging of the two kind of games, because the music that is in it is wonderful, and the feeling of turning the dial in the game to match up with all the rhythm moments is just... When you come across, like, a perfectly executed kind of interactive experience, that can be really satisfying.
Yeah, it's just got a really crisp, like, UX and UI.
Yeah.
And
just the movements are just so solid, and the color matching, it's just like that electronic crack that goes straight into your brain.
Is it procedural from stuff that you put in, like songs that you load into the game, or is it a set track list?
I don't know 100%. It seems like a set track list now.
Okay.
And they've just got a couple of early songs, and they're still
working
on
that.
That
will be the difference between me wanting to buy that or not, is whether or not I can put music that I know I will like into it.
Yeah, that's true. Like, and I get that. For me, the sort of nerd techno music they were demoing was exactly something I enjoyed.
Oh, so is it like chiptune-y type stuff?
Kind of, yeah. Okay. But with a bit more wider reach than not the specific kind of beep-beeps.
I think it's called Nerdcore or something.
Kinda
what's MC like Frontalot? That, maybe?
Yeah, it's just the thing. I don't know. I don't know music. I barely know video games. Stop asking me music questions. But it just made me think of those kind of interactive kind of color games that I just used to, I loved early on when Steam came and then Guitar Hero and all of that. It just was really solid, really beautiful, wonderful music. The eyes all seemed nice, seemed great. It's just, I was just a tight, lovely game.
Yeah, this is the one thing that perhaps we should say. When we say the people were nice, all of them are. Yes. Every single one of these exhibitors is just like top. Top people who are super, super friendly. Mm-hmm. I just hope that doesn't sound like the exception that proves the rule that generally they're all pricks. But no, they're all obviously super approachable, and that's another great thing about PAX generally is everyone here is just kind of nice.
And they want to show people their games. That's why they came to a place.
They have
full
a
of
very
people.
Fiscally incentivized reason for being kind to me.
Yep. So West of Loathing was the next game that I saw.
I didn't see this at all.
Yeah, so it looks a little bit generic at first glance. Yep. It's sort of a stick figure, black and white adventure game with a comedy bent.
Ooh, wait. West of Loathing?
Yeah.
I did totally play this. I completely forgot.
Well done.
Yep, I'm a
fucking idiot.
That's so, staying in. I deserve it. Please.
I'm
continue.
Allowed to swear at PAX. We all have R18 wristbands on.
Yes,
so,
for adult use.
For adult use only.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So West of Loathing is, like I said, it's a 2D kind of adventure game.
Yep.
Comedy focused. It kind of reminded me some of the... like the writing and the jokes. That reminded me a little bit of Space Quest.
Yep.
But the guy I was speaking to... did not cite that as one of his inspirations because he feels like it mischaracterizes the gameplay.
Sure.
And who did I speak to? Zach, the creative director. The game is called Asymmetric. Sorry, not the game. The company, the team is Asymmetric. The game is West of Loathing, and it is just like a fun 2D kind of adventure comedy thing. And
so as I said, I did play it.
Yeah.
Because I'm terrible. But I did actually kind of like the jokey style of it.
Yeah.
And the way that the dialogue was written. And for me, in those kind of games, it's the writing that sells it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got a very good voice to it. This sounds very minor in the scope of these, as these things go, but it was also, like, surprisingly responsive. Like, it felt like...
Oh, yeah.
Because I played it on one of the mobile tablets, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you just kind of get this impression that when you're playing a mobile game, it'll either be a little bit floaty because it's not really the focus, but everything was so quick. Like, the text comes in at a very satisfying and easy to read rate, and, like, your movement in each of these spaces is just very immediate and quick. It's just, it felt very satisfying to play as well.
Yeah, for like smartphone like games, all the ones I've played so far have been really responsive. It's like people are actually, the developers are actually understanding like how to implement things properly and how to create that sense of movement and space inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just wonderful to see people do that.
Yeah, yeah. Just some final notes on that. Zach, the creative director, said that it was sort of inspired by Quest for Glory, which is a game I've not played, so I don't really... And when he told me that, he knew that I would not have played it based on my age, which is a little bit, but he was not wrong. So what can I say about that?
Then he was not wrong.
Yeah, he was not wrong. And that is already out on Steam, but is hoping to be released on iOS by the end of 2017,
awesome.
The current year of our Lord.
So the next game that I have is called Sneaker. Sneaker is so satisfying because it is a sneaking game where you hit people with sneakers to knock them out.
That sounds so bad. I hope it's got more to it than that.
It's basically just a stealth game, but like in a non-violent...
Like competitive?
No. Like
okay.
Yeah, well, so...
This is a step in the right direction so far.
So to recover some lost ground, apparently, from David's opinion, the game is a stealth game, classic. Sneak through the shadows, avoid the guards, all that kind of stuff. Except your main tool of interacting with the world are shoes and sneakers, right?
So are they different kinds of sneakers? Do they do different kinds of damage?
Yes, David,
they have
they
different
do.
Attack
well,
speeds.
They do different things. They don't do different kinds of damage.
Okay.
So, you know, you knock out a guard instantly because no one can stand a pair of sneakers being smacked across your head.
Mm.
And you basically just navigate, throw sneakers to distract people, smack people unconscious with sneakers, hide their bodies in vents, all that kind of stuff.
All right. Is there like an Air Jordan-based economy in this game?
No, but you can rewind time with a cassette player.
Tell me how that features in the theme of the game.
Well, it's a good excuse to make you, if you make a mistake, immediately go back from it.
Okay, and you have like a Donny Sorkman or whatever?
It was unbranded, David.
Yeah.
But to me it was really interesting because it was a stealth game that kind of was not murdery. Because you look at a lot of stealth games out there, And a lot of them either are about robots.
Yep.
And so robots can't die, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or the games like Thief or Hitman, where there are no kill runs and stuff like that. But
you kill a lot of people,
they
generally.
They kind of encourage you to murder a lot of people. And the idea of just bashing people over the head with sneakers just appeals to me. It's a bit silly. It's a bit fun. And it's kind of a less violent.
Yeah. And so I'm assuming this is somewhat kid-focused?
It's kind of just... It's all, played to jokes.
It's all ages.
I would say it was all ages, yeah. I don't think that's a bad thing.
It's good fun for the whole family.
Jesus, man. Stop throwing it under the bus like
that.
Yeah,
look, I haven't played it. I'm sure it sounds great. I want to make this very clear. I am teasing John, not the game.
Yeah, see, if you can't see my face, but it is bright red and awkward.
Yeah, this is about me antagonizing my good friend and co-host.
Yeah,
this is the stuff you miss from the indie product that needs all the help it can get, probably.
Yeah, this is stuff you miss from the main show, with the hours of him just
grinding you into a fine paste.
It's just a wonderful little experience, and I really enjoy that. I always want to find games that do what other games do, but just don't involve murder. And I don't know why I feel like I have to say that, but it's like sometimes I'm like, can we just play paintball?
Yeah.
Can we just play paintball?
Sometimes I just don't feel like ending a life.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not that's weird, if that's just me, but sometimes...
I wake up out of bed, you know, the sun's shining, the birds are singing, and I don't want to brutally stab someone for my coffee. Because it's too involved. But anyway... That's Sneakers. It's a fun game. They're still working on it. It's going to be next year.
Okay.
When they get a time to release. So.
All right. Sweet. Sweet.
That back up.
All right. Now the last game on my list is Odd Gods by In Between Worlds. And that's in as in the place where your D&D party would go to rest for the night.
Oh.
Not in between as a single word.
Yeah.
Just in case any of you wanted to Google that rather than clicking on the link that's in the description. I spoke to one of the programmers, Nick London. Unfortunately, he wasn't the most central person in development, so he acknowledged fairly early on that he wouldn't be able to answer every one of my questions. But it is an interesting game set in the late 90s and also the rest of time.
Because, as I aforementioned, time travel. You want to get me interested? Time travel. Or AI. Or time travel.
Yeah.
Or both. But, yeah, so it's a time-traveling game set in the late 90s, and so the two characters that you can pick so far is a skater boy or a goth.
And the gameplay style is a tactical RPG. So kind of imagine something between XCOM and then something more like Baldur's Gate.
I'm very excited right now.
Yeah, so this is going to be right up your alley. Simultaneous turn-based combat.
Oh, yep.
So you queue up all of your actions at in the turn.
Yeah.
And then they go off. All of your characters and all of the opposing enemies all move at once. And so you have to anticipate the movements of your...
Yeah, so those games are very interesting, but sometimes I struggle with how they're implemented.
Yeah.
And I can't recall it now, but there's a game where you kind of play synth people and you kind of control their movements and directions.
Oh, Synapse. Yeah. Broken Synapse.
Broken Synapse.
I think it's
a game I want to love.
Frozen Synapse is the name of the game.
Yeah, Frozen Synapse. A game I want to love, but struggle to.
Yeah.
Because I feel like the AI is just way too hard.
Yeah, and in Frozen Synapse, it's a little bit more real time than this, if that makes sense. Like the way... Like, cause that's a shooter.
Yes.
It's not a shooter, but the characters have guns.
Yep. They do violence.
And the way they move and the way grenades work and all that, it's all very, very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
This was, at least what I played, melee for the most part.
Okay.
I imagine you probably get spellcasters and stuff later on. But, I found it pretty intuitive, and one of the things that the guy I was speaking to, Nick, pointed out is that every enemy has a tell based on how they're gonna move. So, like, before you queue up your movements, you can judge their stance or their facing and try and anticipate what they're gonna do. So they do have clues in there that make it a little bit easier.
Yeah.
It's also grid-based, so it's a bit more predictable than something like Frozen Synapse, which is completely continuous.
Yeah,
in terms of its movement.
Just a full world rather than that. Yeah. I need those lines, David.
Yeah.
I need those boxes so I can think out of them.
And one of the other things as well is that I only experimented with a couple of the attacks, but you have different attacks that can help you out. So you have like a charge, and so if you'll move forward until you hit someone and then you'll attack them, and so you don't have to be completely precise. So there's a lot of stuff that makes the gameplay fun, but narrative-wise, it's not procedural, which surprised me.
Okay.
Because whenever I see grid-based, top-down thing that kind of looks dungeon crawly, I just presume it's randomly procedural.
They develop some sort of algorithm to construct the world.
Yeah, but it's a traditional RPG, so it's got a narrative story that is pre-written, and you go to specific places and meet real characters and have real conversations and all that kind of stuff.
That sounds madness. I can't remember the last time I played one of those group-based games that actually had a... like a structured narrative. Like
yeah,
that.
And so that was, again, a huge point in my favor, because I'm really not a fan of most procedural generated stuff now.
Yes, see our episode on Invisible Ink.
Yeah, see that, and just know that is my feeling.
Yeah.
There was something else I was going to mention. Oh, yes, the
core of the plot, I wasn't 100% sure on, but the sort of overarching thing is there are these very 90s-inspired contemporary gods, sort of like a Neil Gaiman American Gods thing. So you've got the god of advertising, and the god of greed is all about, like, fast food and, like, commercialism and that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah,
and it's about, you know, navigating through time travel and talking to demons and then combating or perhaps aligning with certain gods. And so it's very cosmic and kind of kooky and kind of fun.
It sounds intense. Like, really interesting ideas there. So, yeah. That sounds cool. I'm really excited.
Yeah, so I don't think I got a release date for that one because it was a fair ways off still, but keep your eye out for that. That was Odd Gods by In Between Worlds.
I'm so impressed with your professionalism.
Yeah, immediately after me saying I didn't get this piece of information. Do you have anything else on your good list?
Those are the main games that really stood out with me. But you know what I did do today?
Mm.
I did actually try, for the first time, real VR. I'll be very brief.
Oh, have you not, like, done a full...
I haven't used a Vive until today.
Okay.
The reason was I actually used an Oculus in a live action kind of environment, like in a very interesting...
I would say that counts as having tried VR, though.
Yeah, yeah. Now that I think about it, the reason I don't count it is because it was kind of terrible.
Oh, right.
The Oculus didn't really work with my eyes. I've got kind of Oculus problems, and so my eyes don't actually match up. Everything was really blurry. I don't want to count it because it was the best experience. And then
that's the best way to judge things empirically, is if you don't like them, you ignore the data. But continue, please.
Yeah, I wanted to give it another shot to impress me, David. I didn't want to dismiss it out of hand.
You need to make sure that the result was repeatable.
However,
in a peer review study,
I used the Samsung Gear VR, and the same thing happened. But with the Vive, it seems better. I don't think it's perfect. Regardless, I did play two games. I played one game called Virtually Impossible.
Yeah, I see. VR does not work for me. I've tried the Vive before, and I wanted to give this a go. But when I saw it was VR, I was like, "Well, it's not going to work for my misshapen asymmetrical eyes."
The Vive seemed to work all right, so it was okay. But I'm not 100%. But Virtually Impossible was kind of fun. It's one of those. It's up to four players.
Yep.
It's basically like the WarioWare kind of mini action things.
Okay, cool.
In between missions, you're driving a little go-kart around the map trying to avoid bombs, and then every so often a big thing comes down and you have to do a mini game like catch a fly with some chopsticks or toss a bottle
onto the table.
And
so these are like, what, like 6 seconds, 12 seconds long?
Yeah. 20, you know, depending on the difficulty, as you drive along and you get more distance. The difficulty
it's like
increases.
A party game with like other players.
It's like a party game as well. So I don't know if they've implemented more than one player yet, but right now it's just one player, and you see how far you can drive.
I see. My biggest problem with VR headsets is the cost of entry. I like the idea of a game that requires four VR headsets to play. That seems like a ballsy move.
I appreciate the goal.
Yeah, when you say that,
the brazen audacity of that play is genuinely impressive.
And the other VR game I tried was a game called Double Shot, which is basically you're a bartender and you have to make cocktails, and also people are trying to murder you and you need to shoot all of them. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's like I'm a big fan of defense games.
Yeah.
And so it was very fun for me because you basically just go reach behind you and just pull out a random gun and you start shooting dudes.
Okay.
And then you're also going to make sure you mix the right cocktail.
Yeah, see, that's kind of cool because like, when you said you're making cocktails, obviously the first thing I thought of was Tapper, right? And that's just about managing an onslaught of people. It's interesting to add guns to the alcohol mix. another one of the tools you can use to keep the filthy masses at bay.
Yes.
So it seems like a more logical extension than you would think at first at first glance. And I wouldn't mind giving that a go on someone else's VR system. The price of entry is just too much, right?
Yeah. Well, there is one here at PAX, and they're all set up. So
you
know, give it a try. We'll see how it goes. And they're going to release it, I think, next year. They're going to add three levels or something like that.
Mm.
Seems really nice. Really lovely going.
I genuinely wonder, like, what is the install base of full PC-compatible VR headsets, do you think?
Absolutely no idea. I feel like it'd be really small, but...
Yeah, it's got to be minuscule, right? As far as, like...
They cost, like, a grand
each. Oh, we made another survival horror game that you can play on any computer.
You know,
like... Install base is such an important consideration when you're making a game, and maybe this stuff is great for like a portfolio or something like that. But whenever I see anyone saying, "Hey, here's this great idea for a VR game that I have," there's part of me that's just like, "Oh no, honey, no."
I think VR games are kind of in that they're kind of like party games in that when someone yeah. owns one, people come over and come around and we'll try it out. And it becomes one of those things. It becomes an artifact.
Yeah.
It's not just you sitting in your room alone playing on something, a console or computer. It's something people will want to look at and see. And especially as some of the games, like, they have in them, like, oh, see how far you can go, see what you can do.
Yeah.
Someone else can have a shot.
And I think it's probably worth me qualifying that we have VR headsets that are going to be console compatible as well.
Yeah,
and
the Sony VR is the whole thing.
Yeah, the potential uptake of that. Like, apparently the PS Pro and what it's able to do with the PlayStation VR is a little bit underwhelming. But yeah. Apparently the Xbox One... and their VR headset, I don't know what plugs into that. Maybe it's just an Oculus.
I think it's an Oculus. No,
because they own that now, right?
Yeah,
or does Facebook own Oculus? I can never keep track, John,
of which multinational company yeah. owns what.
And the thing is, the whole problem is that there's only like six of them. Why can't I keep it straight?
Okay, David, get down from the table, please. But they look interesting, and I do know some people with Vives, and I should go and go hang out and force them to play games with me.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Anyway. That's pretty much all I got to talk about right now. There are more indie games I haven't got to yet, the ones you've mentioned and some more, but I'm hoping to go look at them now and maybe
yeah.
talk to some more people.
See, I'm looking forward to the ones I had. Like, straight up, though, like, I know... To declare... I don't want to make it sound like I'm declaring a winner or anything like that, but
yep.
the whole premise of our show is...
Declaring winners, yes.
No, the whole premise of our show is that we only have so much time and resources for games.
Find the truth. Oh, yes. That, yeah. yeah, time and yeah. resources for games, yeah.
Yeah, you would... You came up with the premise. Fucking hell, John.
Yeah,
like,
I did, didn't I?
Point is, there is a tendency for me to, like, prioritize which ones I'm going to go into first.
Yeah.
And, like, it's rare for me to go through an indie showcase and look at a game like Rumu that stands out so much. I mean, admittedly, Orwell stood out pretty heavily for me last year, and that's here again.
At Season 2.
Yeah, Season 2 of Orwell. And so that was a pretty big standout last year. Like, it's generally only, like, one or two that really are like, okay, I'm going to follow that and pick it up. And,
yeah.
and for me, like, Rumu is just such a standout in terms of, like, the quality of its look and animation and the theme and premise and all that kind of stuff. It really grabbed me.
I know for a fact that I will play Spin Rhythm when it comes out.
Yeah.
Because it just
of course you will. Your brain works that way.
Yes, and it's just a satisfying...
It's deterministic. It's just...
I like shining lights and flashing colors. What can I say? And there's a bit of a doof-doof music in the background. My brain just becomes animalistic. I just... there for hours. But the game that really will definitely bring me back is The Gardens Between.
Yeah.
Love that. Beautiful game.
No, that I definitely do need to take a look at that as well, because that sounds right up my alley.
Oh, no, it's super great. But hoping to see them in the years.
So just to wrap us up here, is there anything else beyond the Indie Showcase at PAX that you're looking forward to for the remainder of your time here? Is there anything else that you were planning on doing?
I'm honestly probably just going to go hit up the Board Game Lounge. One of my favorite parts about PAX is that they have the whole tabletop area where people just sit down and play games. And they have
yeah.
these wonderful signs that are like, player wanted, we'll teach, etc.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. It's like a board game library turned up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'm not super into that side of things because it requires me to look at and talk to strangers.
Yeah, and he's actually facing the wall even though we're in an open room.
Yeah,
very...
I know John and I have enough trouble looking at him,
yeah.
you know. But, yeah, my whole thing is just panel on panel on panel on panel. And so there's like the Nano Jam I mentioned I'm going
yep.
to, the Penny Arcade live D&D game. Ever since, like... The Penny Arcade D&D podcast is what got me into D&D, and
yeah.
I got you into D&D to
you
some
did.
Extent.
Yes,
and
fair.
So it's a locus point, and from there a whole bunch of other people were infected with the D&D bug, and I kind of owe that to this group of people. So it's going to be very awesome to finally actually have an opportunity to see them live, because that's
yeah.
going to be a full circle journey for myself and my D&D journey.
Yes, the cycle will be complete. The butterflies will burst from your chest. As the room echoes with the house that screams.
Are you planning on checking out the Diversity Lounge at any point?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love the Diversity Lounge.
Yeah, see, you might be here on Sunday, right?
Yes.
David Gator, or Gaida, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, is actually going to do a Q&A there, and I'm definitely going to check that out.
Well, then I'm definitely coming on Sunday, aren't I?
Yeah.
Great. I guess that's us at PAX, then.
Yeah, so as always... At SlowpokesCast is our Twitter. I'll be tweeting some stuff while I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
SlowpokesPodcast.com. is our main website. Facebook.com/SlowpokesPodcast is
yep.
where John runs his little Facebook domain.
Yeah, that's where my cult exists.
And, you know, Google us on iTunes and all that other good stuff. Give us a review. Give us a rating.
Yes.
Check out our other things.
Just be nice. Share it with your friends. All right, well, I've been John.
I've been David.
This has been PAX. And, oh my God, David, we didn't mention what game is next week.
Do you want to?
Yes.
All right, what game is next week?
I don't know.
Alien Isolation.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
There you go. So come listen to us talk about Alien Isolation and hear how scared I get. The answer is very...
Extremely.
So scared.
All right, join us for that, and thanks so much for listening to us talk at PAX.